We present Condemned by Joe Smith. Winchester Assizes, 1830.
Order! Order in court! As to you, Robert Holdaway, you are convicted of having riotously and tumultuously assembled, together with other persons, and of having proceeded with force to pull down and destroy the poorhouse of the United Parishes of Bramshott, Headley, and Kingsley in the county of Hampshire. Your conduct on that day shows that you had a deliberate design to compel persons into measures which could not fail to be destructive of the law of the land. You went to execute those measures with numbers which seemed to defy resistance. And upon your order, the mob proceeded to demolish the house. In every sense and construction of the word, you were the ringleader in that work of mischief and destruction. Therefore, deeply as many others may be stained with the guilt of this transaction, if a sacrifice is to be made to offended justice, and one must surely be made, then you are the fit person to be selected for it. The law must be enforced. It travels with a slow but sure pace, and sooner or later overtakes the offender with the dreadful punishment of death. I therefore hold out no hope to you, Robert Holdaway, of any extension of mercy from the Crown. It now remains only for me to pass upon you the sentence of the law. I hope that you will earnestly...
In the year 1830, the south of England was aflame with riot. Farm labourers, destitute through low wages and rising prices, rose up in an attempt to gain better living conditions by forcing a reduction in the tithes payable to the clergy.
Happy New Year, Mr. Lowe.
And to you, Mr. Bridger. It has to be better than last year.
Oh, we must hope so. How are repairs going down at the workhouse?
Slowly. Well, the place was thoroughly sacked, as you know.
It was an unfortunate business.
Indeed, and a costly one to the ratepayers of Selborne.
And to think the objective of the action was to reduce the rate.
Oh, you should be cautious in referring to an objective, Mr. Bridger. You might implicate yourself in the affair.
We farmers did nothing, except try to stop the mob from causing trouble.
But you didn't succeed in that, did you? And there are some in the village who would accuse you farmers of starting the riot.
Mr. Lowe, you and I have been friends for many years. In your position of vestry clerk, you're not seriously laying this charge at our door.
No. Though, clearly, you would have benefited from the reduction in rates and tithes had it been achieved.
But it was not. And now, more than 20 of our village men lie in Winchester jail. 8 are to be transported, and 1 is to pay for it with his life.
Robert Holdaway, yes. And unfairly so, in my opinion.
In the opinion of all right-minded people here.
All except Mr. Cobbold, the vicar.
Even Mr. Cobbold should see the injustice of it. After all, he did speak up for Holdaway at the trial.
He damned him with faint praise. There's no love lost between those two.
Yet Holdaway stopped the mob from attacking him outside the vicarage. There's no denying it.
But at the farmer's urging, I'm told. You asked him to use his influence on the ringleaders.
He were the natural choice. A man respected by labourers and farmers alike.
No hope of a reprieve for him?
Not much, I think. Though I've just been to see Mrs. Cowburn.
Mr. Cowburn's a good solicitor.
Apparently he's writing to the trial judge today.
Mr. Cowburn has friends in high places, I'm told.
He'll need them all, in my opinion. The authorities have chosen their scapegoats now, and they won't want to be seen to back down.
To Baron Sir John Vaughan. My lord, admiring as every man must the admirable manner in which the course of justice has been followed at Winchester, I will yet ask if its severities may not be fully accomplished without the sacrifice of life.
It's the right to see you, Mr. Coburn.
Ah, Lawrence, come in, come in.
You look busy, William. Shall I come back?
No, no, I've just finished this letter to the trial judge and was reading it over.
About the Selborne riot?
I am occupied with nothing else at the moment. A tragic business and unnecessary.
Hardly unique, though. The whole of southern England was aflame at the time.
But in Selborne it could have been avoided. I have the evidence of my own eyes to prove it.
You know the place well, then.
Oh, it's a jewel of a village. I have become very attached to it, but with its fair share of problems in these difficult times, as in all rural communities.
And your particular concern?
Robert Holdaway, the man judged to have been the ringleader. He's to hang in a fortnight.
Stern measures by the new government to prove their mettle, and they appear to have worked. The troubles ended as swiftly as they began. The fear of the gallows had its desired effect.
Oh, I agree such measures were needed. But in this case, they've got the wrong man.
A few examples to encourage the others. There are bound to be some mistakes made.
But not a single person was injured in the affair.
I'll wager it was a damn close-run thing.
Nonetheless, not one life was lost. I grant you property was damaged.
Which is a capital offence.
And I'll not deny our need to protect property where necessary, Lawrence, and with the severest penalties of the law. But Holdaway certainly held life sacred, and property too in some instances. I'm sure far worse acts would have been committed by the mob if he'd not been at their head.
How come he was there?
Every man in Selborne was there.
Well, yourself included?
Oh, no, I was here in London at the time, but my wife was at home and kept me informed by letter. In fact, I have them here somewhere.
She was among the crowd?
No, our door opens onto the street, near to where the mob first assembled. She had only to look out of the window. Ah, here, this is how she describes the start of it on the Monday.
We have had grand doings here today, my dearest husband, and have been half frightened out of our wits. Between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning, 300 to 400 men assembled outside the vicarage and ordered out Mr. Cobbold to sign an agreement to take £300 a year from his farmers instead of his tithe. To this he made some resistance.
Impossible!
Why do you find it possible, Vicar Cobbold, if you consider it for a while?
You wish me to reduce my tithes by how much?
By half. We think £300 a year is quite enough for you.
Do I take it you are threatening me with violence if I do not comply?
Threats? We've issued no threats, Vicar. Only reasonable argument. All the labourers in the village put together wouldn't earn £300 in a year.
Could you live on half your wages?
Why, good if they were as fat as yours.
Living on half my wages wouldn't make no difference to me. Half of nothing's nothing. Even I can figure that out.
Same here.
The farmers say they'll pay us higher wages if you'll agree to lower the tithes. Will you do it, Mr. Cobbold?
Fewer than 200 men live in Selborne, Lawrence.
So it was not just a local mob.
By my reckoning, nearly half of the men were from neighbouring parishes.
That would need some organising.
Precisely. And I am confident that Holdaway had nothing to do with it.
Who then?
Oh, I have my suspicions, and so did the rest of the village. But I am not here to prove another man's guilt. My concern is to show that it was not Holdaway. You'll notice that up to this point in the story, there is no suggestion he was involved, other than as a bystander.
What happened next?
They gave the vicar half an hour to consider his position and left some of their number watching to make sure he wouldn't escape. Then, as my wife puts it...
They went down to the workhouse, where they destroyed all the master's furniture, turned out his papers, broke his clock and set the building on fire in several places. The windows were smashed and feather beds pulled to pieces. In just a quarter of an hour, the house was completely ransacked. Then the mob came back, the worse for drink, to deal with Mr. Cobbold.
Mr. Cobbold! Are you at home?
The time's up, Vicar!
Here's your answer now! Knock the door down, you braggy mouth!
Burn the place down!
Robert! Mr. Holdaway! A word with you, if you please.
Yes, Mr. Bridger.
I fear this mob will get out of control unless we do something.
They're not in a mood for compromise.
And the compasses has been doing a fair trade in beer today, which doesn't help. You'd be making a tidy profit if you were still the landlord there.
But I'm not. What do you suggest we do then?
You know most of them by name, and they listen to you. Remember the way you handled them when you ran the pub? See if you can talk some sense into them.
I reckon the vicar deserves what's coming to him.
No time to air old grievances now, Robert. We'll have a death on our hands if this goes on, and that'll be in nobody's interest. Look, quick, he's coming out now.
All right, stand back. Yes, you, John Cobb, and you, Aaron Harding, and your brother.
What's this then, Aldi? Trying to act a village constable?
Trying to stop you making fools of yourselves, as usual, Aaron.
You're not behind the bar now.
If I was, you'd be out on your ear. Stand back, William Hoare. You're not going in there. And you, Thomas, out. This side of the gate, please.
Mr. Holdaway, may I ask the meaning of all this? Why have you brought this rabble to my gate?
I think you know the situation full well, Mr. Cobbold. These people are here to ask you quite reasonably to take less in tithes from the village.
I am aware of their ridiculous demand, and I also see the farmers standing by hoping to benefit from their labourers' misdeeds. But why do I find you here, Mr. Holdaway?
I stand here at your gate to stop these good villagers taking steps they might regret later.
You mean you're here to protect me?
Sir, you once told me you would have no mercy on me, but you see here today I have had mercy on you.
Holdaway was referring, I believe, to the vicar's efforts over many years to expel him from running the only public house in Selborne.
For what reason was he expelled?
Oh, he kept what some called an irregular house, though in my opinion it was no worse than those at neighbouring places. But, for whatever reason, a personal animosity had built up between them over the years.
I see.
Yet, though the vicar had deprived him of what he deemed his lawful calling, Holdaway still stood at his gate to protect him.
I'm beginning to see our friend Holdaway in a new light.
I only hope the trial judge will see it that way too. Due to pressure from the mob, Mr. Cobbold eventually agreed to sign a document which promised to reduce his tithes by half.
But the pressure was not from Holdaway.
No, but he was seen there, at the front of the crowd, when the concession was made. And much the same situation befell him the next day.
The disturbance lasted more than one day, then?
No, not in Selborne. It moved to the neighbouring village of Headley. In fact, it was for events which happened in Headley that Holdaway now stands to lose his life.
And how did he get involved with trouble in another village?
I confess, I'm a little unclear of that myself.
Why me, Mr. Bridger? There must be someone else you can find.
There's nobody else we can trust, Robert. You're well known around these parts, and well liked too.
I'd willingly go on my own.
But the mob won't hear of it. They want to see it with their own eyes. Every farmer in the parish signing that piece of paper.
You've signed it yourself?
Oh, right underneath Mr. Cobble's signature. Do you see?
So, who have we still to get?
The outlying farms. Newton, Emshot, Gretham.
I can get to Newton today. The rest will have to wait till tomorrow.
Tomorrow the Headley farmers are planning to meet their rector at midday. We want to get their signatures too.
The mob have a different reason for wanting to go to Headley. You know that, don't you?
I had heard, yes. Another workhouse.
Aye, another workhouse. How's it going to look when I arrive at Headley for this meeting with a mob of ruffians at my tail?
You'll do it for us, though, won't you?
It seems I have little choice.
And at Headley he lost control.
Oh, I wouldn't put it that way. He'd never set himself up as a leader. It's difficult to see how he can be accused of failing to control a following he didn't want and hadn't asked for.
Well, I'm sure if anyone can get him off, you can, William. But I must be on my way to meet a client now. I'll leave you to finish reading your letter. Good day to you.
Thank you, Lawrence. Good day. Baron Sir John Vaughan, a sacrifice of Holdaway's life. Far worse characters than Holdaway are not condemned to die, and this is known by those to whom the punishment is intended as a warning. I venture to say that hanging Holdaway will do actual harm in Selborne. There is a feeling of horror, even I feel it, that one who is not the most guilty should suffer the extreme penalty, while others of far worse character escape with comparatively little punishment. Forgive me if I have been too free with my words, and let my motive be my apology. I am, with great respect, your lordship's most obedient humble servant, William Cowburn.
Not the sort of weather farmers like, is it, Mr. Bridger?
Oh, you know us farmers well enough by now, Mr. Lowe. The weather's never right for us, nor the price of corn, nor the price of labour.
I should know better than to ask. I see you've written to Mr. Cowburn, telling him your version of the troubles last November.
He asked me to. He's as fed up as we are of Mr. Cobbold's efforts to wriggle out of any blame.
Meanwhile, it's left to the vicar of another parish to come and console the families of the men who've been sentenced.
To William Cowburn, Esquire. My dear sir, as vicar of
the neighboring parish of Newton Valence, I write this to say how rejoiced I am to find you are espousing poor Holdaway's cause. I view the whole subject in exactly the same light as yourself. I told many of my friends yesterday that I now thought Mr. Cobbold's prospects and life were in danger, and his friends should persuade him never to go near Selborne again. I have had several transactions with Holdaway, and always found him a well-behaved, civil, honest, obliging, peaceable, and respectful man, and shall always be ready and happy to say so, or write so, if it will in any way assist your cause. And may God grant you success. If such an humble individual as myself can in any way assist your cause, I can only say that exertion shall not be wanting. Yours very sincerely, Edmund White. P.S. Mr. Cobbold went to see Lord Melbourne on Monday.
The devil he did! The pompous meddling... Oh, I'd never have believed the hatred in that man ran so deep. It seems he'll stop at nothing to see Holdaway hang. Time is not on our side.
Have you heard from your husband today, Mrs. Galburn?
Nothing yet, Mr. White, but I am expecting his messenger from London at any time.
I sent him word yesterday of Mr. Cobbold's visit to London.
It's as well that he should know, though I imagine he was not pleased to learn of it. What have you there?
A petition, signed by more or less all the landowners in the parish, expressing their wish that Holdaway should be reprieved. We hope that a stay of execution, at least, might be granted until the facts of his case have been more carefully considered.
Then we must send it to my husband without delay. I shall ask the messenger to return with it directly he arrives.
We can only hope that each small thing we do will tip the scales of justice a little in our favour.
My dearest wife, will you pass my sincere thanks to Mr. White for his most welcome efforts in preparing the petition? Time alone will be the judge of its effect, and time is now in precious short supply to us.
Mr. Cabman, letter for you, sir.
Ah, thank you. From the Duke of Wellington. Well, it's short and to the point.
Sir, having attended the special commission at Winchester and been present at Holdaway's trial, and being of opinion that the preservation of the peace of the county and the protection of the lives and properties of His Majesty's subjects require that examples should be made, I cannot concur in the recommendation that this pardon should be conferred upon Holdaway. I have the honour to be, sir, your most obedient humble servant, Wellington.
Oh, well, no more than I expected, I suppose. I don't imagine he even read more than the first line. Perhaps I'm trying for too much. Let me write to Lord Londonderry and see if he can use his influence. But I must make it clear that I'm not asking for charges to be dropped, just the sentence to be reduced. My lord, I have just received a letter from His Grace the Duke of Wellington stating that he could not join in the recommendation of mercy to be extended to Holdaway. Now, if your lordship has time to read the papers and should feel differently, I know with how much zeal and judgment the good cause will be promoted. An opportunity for amendment will be given to a man not fit to be hurried to his account. I would not take away his life, but banish him. He is not worthy to live in England. His punishment will be fully accomplished by transportation for life. I am, etc., William Coburn.
Less than a week to go. Have you seen Mrs. Holdaway lately?
I believe she's out of the village at the moment. She may be trying to get to Winchester to see Robert.
I imagine she'll stay there until...
Until Saturday. Yes.
How goes it, William?
Not well, I'm afraid, Lawrence. No news of a reprieve from the Home Office, although they're still considering the case, of course. But time presses. 3 more days and it will all be too late.
You received no encouragement at all?
Oh, I've received messages of good intent from the Duke of Rutland this morning, for example. He says, I have written as strong a letter as I dare to Lord Melbourne. If the Duke of Wellington is against us, I fear it will be hard to obtain mercy. But I have done my very best.
Oh, let us hope his very best is good enough.
They don't have the personal involvement which I have in this case.
You said when I was here last that the sentence related to events in Headley, not Selborne, and I had to leave before you could explain.
The evidence of greatest importance was given by James Shoesmith, the master of Headley Workhouse. At the trial, he said he saw a large mob consisting of upwards of 1,000 persons coming from Selborne towards Headley. They all had sticks. Robert Holdaway was at the head of them, and he stopped the mob outside their house.
What hold are you here?
Yes, you'd better turn out, for they mean to pull the place down.
But there are old people here, and children ill with fever.
They'll be protected and taken care of. Which part of the house are they in?
Oh, in those rooms up there, just see.
Mark the window! I'll take responsibility they're not armed. Henry James, you're a big man. You see to that, will you?
Leave it to me, Robert. I'll see that they come to no harm.
I mean you no harm, Mr. Shoesmith. Nor your wife, nor your goods. So get them out as soon as you can. They're all fired up. I can't hold them.
Oh, no you don't, my fine lads. No one shall enter here at present.
You give us time, won't you, to get our belongings out?
We'll give you 2 hours. Henry James here and his family will stay to help you move them. The rest of you, away, up the village green now. Come on, come away, I said.
Move along there. Follow Mr. Holdaway. Now off you go. Right, Mr. Shoesmith. Let's get your goods into the yard. Where shall we start?
The mob moved on past the workhouse and on to Headley Green, about half a mile away.
So trouble was averted?
Unfortunately not. Our friend Holdaway met the rector of Headley on the green and went with him 200 yards up the road to a public house called the Holly Bush. Shoesmith described what happened in his testimony at the trial.
The mob came back in about an hour. That was about midday. I was upstairs with my wife in the room where the sick children were. They rushed like a torrent into every room and began breaking the partitions, tearing out the windows and taking down the ceilings. After that, they made their way through the roof and began to throw away the tiles and force rafters through the top of the house. There were 40,000 to 50,000 tiles stripped off. Then they took a 40-gallon copper out of the brickwork, rolled it into the yard and began striking it with their bludgeons. I never saw it after that. There were others in the yard, breaking the gates, and some were engaged in drinking my wine.
When Holdaway came out of the holly bush and the farmers found the mob had gone back to the house, they naturally asked him to do what he could to stop it. He went down the road as fast as possible, but this time he couldn't control them.
Come away, lads. You've done enough.
You speak of yourself, Mr. Holdaway.
You're in Headley now. We don't take orders from Selborne here.
Have a drink, oldie. There's plenty left.
What do you think of it now, Mr. Holdaway?
It's too bad. It will hang me.
After much persuasion, he succeeded in getting his people away. But by that time, the house was a shell.
Then they all went home?
No, first they went to the next village, Kingsley, which was on the road back to Selborne. Mr. Bennett, a Headley farmer, had taken his threshing machine there for safety, but the mob found it and broke it.
But they weren't tried for that?
Oh, there was enough to try them for without adding that to the list. By the time they'd finished at Kingsley, it must have been starting to get dark. Holdaway shared out the money they'd collected during the day and told them to go home.
And they went quietly?
According to my wife, it was anything but quiet.
They collected £21 in the 2 days, all of which went, I fear, at the public houses, and it ended, as such things do, in fighting. I have heard that there is likely to be a great disturbance at Alton tomorrow, and they expect 1,400 or 1,500 there. I should think till the road is quieter, you had better stay where you are, and we will trust here to kind and merciful providence.
It continued in Alton?
No, it didn't. The military were there, and our village lads knew it. Common sense prevailed at last, it seems.
And as you said, nobody was seriously hurt?
No, nobody. But property had been demolished and money pressed.
So they arrested the ringleaders?
Some 20 out of 1,000 or more rioters were picked up during the next few days, those that had made themselves most obvious during the proceedings. By chance, I was present when Mr. Budd, the local magistrate, took Holdaway, with the help of a detachment of dragoons.
But now, in 3 days' time, he is to hang.
Barring a miracle, yes.
Still no news, Mr. Bridger?
None. But by Saturday we'll know, one way or t'other.
We already know the fate of his family. Poverty, whichever way the verdict goes.
It's always been that way, Mr. Lowe. I can see no reason why we ratepayers should support the families of convicted men.
That sounds rather uncharitable of you, Mr. Bridger.
Oh, afternoon, Mrs. Coburn. I were only stating the facts as I see them.
Then let us pray that your family never finds itself in the same position.
I am a law-abiding man, madam.
And so was Robert Holdaway in the eyes of most. Believe me, Mr. Bridger, if you were a woman, you'd see it differently. So very differently. Good day to you.
Was that the carrier I saw arrive just now? Lawrence, did you see him?
I believe he was delivering to the next floor, William. You've still heard nothing?
Nothing of importance. Another day gone. Why do decisions take so long?
They probably made up their minds days ago. They'll be wondering how to word it to save face.
Oh, politicians. It is the carrier. Have you something there for me, fellow?
Mr. Coburn?
Let me see. I've received your letter with its several enclosures relative to Robert Holdaway, a convict under sentence of death in the jail at Winchester, and beg to inform you that this man has been respited by the judges. Faithfully yours, Melbourne.
He's saved!
Respited. Saved, yes, it would appear so.
Oh, congratulations. You must be a happy man.
Oh, I am, Lawrence. Happy and relieved. I'll wager they'll be rejoicing in Selborne when they hear this.
You've heard then, Mr. Bridger?
I have, Mr. Lowe. I imagine Mr. Coburn must be well pleased with his work.
Aye, I imagine so.
You sound disapproving. Surely this is a cause for some celebration.
Remember what Mrs. Coburn said. I can tell you Mrs. Holdaway is not celebrating today.
Not? But why? Her husband's been spared.
And you won't understand, will you? It makes little difference to her. She'll never see him again.
But surely she must be glad he's not to die.
Glad for him, I'm sure. But she'll be a widow, in practice, if not in fact. Knowing he lives but can't support her just adds to her despair.
The whole village is rejoicing. You alone seem to be unhappy.
Not I alone. Ask the womenfolk. Ask the families of those to be transported. They can already see the door of the workhouse closing on them. Well, the men may be judged guilty, but it's the women and children who'll be paying the price.
Perilous sea passage and virtual slavery in the colonies. It's hardly light treatment for the men.
They will have food to eat. And once their term is served, gainful employment in a land full of opportunity. Would you willingly return to poverty in England? I doubt it. Those men will end their days as landowners and tradesmen on the other side of the world, while their innocent wives and families struggle for survival in their homeland.
I cannot share your sentiment, Mr. Lowe. We should applaud Coburn for saving a life. Not lay the problems of the country at his door.
As you wish. Many will agree with you, I'll own that. But ask the womenfolk, Mr. Bridger. Ask the womenfolk.
The poor ate it feeds from the farmers and church, and the labouring man must line up for his wares. 2 shillings a day is all that we ask, and an end to relief from the poor rate at last.
In Condemned by Joe Smith, the part of William Coburn was played by Robert Venables, Lawrence Wright by Alistair Langlands, Timothy Lowe by Rod Sharp, Farmer Bridger, Trevor Story, Baron Sir John Vaughan, Jefferson Greaves, Mrs. Coburn, Brenda Adams, Robert Holdaway, Tony Grant, Vicar Cobbold, David Wynne, Aaron Harding, Bill Borum, Reverend Edmund White, David Webb, James Shoesmith, Chris Webb, Henry James, Richard Tallock, and the Duke of Wellington, David Bond. The violinist was Andy Johnson and the singer Dillis Williamson. The play was directed by Derek Watts and produced by Brian Harrison. This was a Radio for Real production.
But mercy is all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the time, time, time. These are the rigs of the time.